I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Let's bring up Adam Beasley here from the Herald as we want to get to some Dolphins stuff from training camp the last few days. Hey, Adam, you hear us okay? Good morning.
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Very good. All right, so look, you know, we've been talking about Brian Flores quite a bit here this morning because you got the quarterback situation where he essentially told you, he did tell you that Ryan Fitzpatrick is ahead, and you also got the big news with the offensive line coach who was fired a couple days ago. And I got to tell you, Adam, you know, I think that this has been a very good week for Brian Flores. Specifically, let's start with the offensive line coach where, you know, this is a guy who is telling you, this is a coach who is telling you, he doesn't react, okay, to these situations. He's going to act before the bad things happen, and I think that's a very good look for first-year coach.
Yeah, without knowing exactly what went on behind closed doors, because there had to have been something that was the tipping point to this. He said it had been building for a while, but there had to have been a breaking point for him because it was a pretty drastic move. I would say the two things that were pretty enlightening and encouraging about what Flores said yesterday were this. One, that he knows the easy thing could have been just to limp along, get through the season, and suck it up and go for it and see if you can just make it to January and make the change then. He didn't. He did the harder thing. He ripped the Band-Aid off just four practices in, which, honestly, I had never heard of. I had never heard of a position coach. And offensive line, guys, is a pretty important position coach. It's one of the most important assistants you have in your team. To do it that early is almost unprecedented. It's really surprising without there being an enormous Chris Forster-like scandal. So to me, A, that was encouraging. And B, something else he said that kind of struck a chord was this. He didn't want to make excuses, but he basically acknowledged that he was behind the eight ball because he couldn't assemble a staff the way he wanted due to the fact that he was still coaching the New England Patriots until early February. And so I think that played a role. That, to me, said Pat Flaherty wasn't his number one choice all along. He didn't come out and say that, but my guess is he had other candidates in mind that he would have liked to have gone after. He just didn't have the opportunity because he wasn't formally the head coach yet. And so those two moments of candor to me spoke to, I think, the gravitas this guy has. I mean, we've known he's a serious guy. We know that he's an intense guy. But I think we're coming to the realization that he's a pretty honest guy. Some things he's just not going to talk about because it hurts his franchise to do so. But when he can, he's got some candor. And I think people who say, well, he's just a Belichick clone, have to look deeper, have to look at the things that he's sharing with us. And let's be frank, he doesn't really, I mean, I'm sure he cares about us at some level. He cares about the fans. And that's who he's talking to. He's talking to the fans, he's talking to his players, he's talking to his coaches. He's using us as a conduit. I think that speaks to something about him, his character, that he wants his fans to understand what's going on. So, yeah, I think it was he handled it well. Certainly it's not an ideal situation to can your offensive line coach after a week, but I think he made the best of a bad situation.
And, you know, I was trying to remember the scenario. I think it was back, maybe you remember it better. I think it was back when Philbin was the head coach and they fired the special teams coach after one game because it was one of those games where the special teams were horrific and it cost them the game. And the point being that you got to make that change before the really bad thing happens that costs you the game. Do you remember the scenario that I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was before Philbin because Rizzi was the special teams coach throughout. Philbin, and it was before I was on the beat, so the specifics are a little murky in my brain. But yes, that does sound something very familiar, and that is something that's happened, not just to the Dolphins, but other teams. I mean, look, you don't wake up one day and decide to fire your position coach. You don't. You see these flashing warning signs, and if you ignore them, it's like the check engine light in your car. If you ignore it, at some point your transmission's going to fall out, okay? Flores didn't wait for that, you know, for that breakdown on I-95. He acted now. Did he act too soon? I mean, I at least would have liked to have seen him get through a couple of preseason games. But if there were some real dysfunction, some real structural issues, communication is the thing we hear. There wasn't great communication between either Flaherty and his players or Flaherty and his boss. then I understand. And maybe Flores has gone to Pat and say, look, these things need to change. If not, you're out. They can change. I'm sure that the details will be fleshed out in time. But, you know, it's not ideal to fire. And an offensive line coach has a big, big say in the run game and the game planning, things like that. I wish they would have given him a little more time so that things could work out, but I'm not the head coach of the Miami Dolphins.
How can there be such a difference in opinion from one coach to the next when it comes with the rookie Michael Dieter, where one coach says he's a long ways away from being able to play with the first unit, and then the next guy takes over and he's immediately with the first group? How could there be such a difference of opinion?
Well, Zaslo, nepotism is probably the biggest problem in the NFL. People hire coaches that they're friends with or they're related to or they worked with before. And a lot of times coaches play the players they're familiar with. How many retreads did Gase bring in that were part of his past? And almost none of them panned out. Julius Thomas, Brock Osweiler, all these guys that were part of his past that he brought in because he knew them. And he's actually doing the same thing in New York. They brought up Sam Young for a visit. There have been a long list of former Dolphins players that end up there and coaches, too. And Pat Flaherty knew Chris Reed, knows Chris Reed, has a familiarity with Chris Reed from their time in Jacksonville together. He didn't really know Michael Dieter, and he didn't draft Michael Dieter. That was Chris Greer, obviously. So I think it was more of, hey, we know Reed. I'm not going to get risky with a rookie, even if Reed's not particularly good. But that's what you sometimes see is that, hey, if one coach loves a player because he spent time with him, it's hard to pull him off that. And so when the change was made, maybe cooler heads and saner heads prevailed, and they put in the guy who was taken to the third round, who has a lot of talent, started over 100 games in Wisconsin. But I think that's the reason, is that Flaherty knew Reed from their time together in Jacksonville, and he didn't know Peter very well at all.
Does Josh Rosen seem like the type of kid to you guys that he hears the coach say that Fitzpatrick is clearly ahead right now, and he takes it kind of like a kick in the ass, and he's got to get going?
He better. I mean, what's the big knock on Rosen, right? It's entitled, rich kid, never really had to work for anything. I don't think that's a totally fair representation. I talked to a lot of people in his past who have told me otherwise, but that is the perception. Hot tub in his dorm room, you know, the whole nine yards, UCLA, I don't need football. There have been a lot of check marks in the wrong column for him when it comes to how much does he have a desire for football, how much does he need football, and how much is he driven to be great at football. And so if he doesn't respond now, I mean, think about this. We've all been through ups and downs in our careers. Every single one of us probably had a job that we lost that we wanted, and vice versa. We didn't get a job that we wanted. He's had all that in the last 18 months. I mean, he thought he was going to get drafted higher than 10th. He went 10th to the Cardinals. He thought he was going to start week one for the Cardinals. They started Sam Bradford. He thought he was going to be good as a rookie. He was awful. He thought he was going to have a chance in year two in Arizona, and they traded him and drafted a quarterback number one. Now he's in Miami against who, on paper, he should beat. He should beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the market says, is not a starting quarterback in the NFL. The market says he is probably the 33rd, 34th, 35th best quarterback in the league. And if he can't beat him out, what does that say? It says he's not good enough yet. How does he come to grips with that? How does he come to grips with the fact that his head coach now says publicly, you're not good enough right now to be our starting quarterback? He's either going to go one or two ways. He's going to rise the occasion. Competition is going to bring out the best of him. Or he's going to go in the tank, and he's going to be just a guy and maybe not have a very long NFL career. Players and coaches get a second chance. It's very rare, unless your name is Richie Incognito, that you get a third, fourth, fifth chance. And Rosen's already on his second chance. And if this isn't the year for him, if he doesn't have to be a Pro Bowler, he just has to be good enough for them to say, yeah, that's what we can build around, and he's going to continue to get better. If he can't do that, he might not have a very long NFL career. It's crazy to talk about that right now. But I'll tell you this much, there's someone who is pretty close to him that told me this a while back. If he doesn't work out in Miami and he goes to a third team the next year or the year after, he wouldn't be surprised if Rosen just plays out his rookie contract and then goes and does something else with his career, because, A, he doesn't need the game. He's made that clear. Financially, he's fine because of his parents. And, B, he has so many interests beyond football that he might want to pursue. So I think this is really a tipping point for him in his career. If he year two with the Dolphins, I mean, year one with the Dolphins, year two in the NFL, if he doesn't show something, if he doesn't get on the field and play well, you could be talking 4 years from now, hey, whatever happened to Josh Rosen, where is he? Is he probably thinking about that right now? No, I'm sure all he's thinking about right now is getting better and beating out Ryan Fitzpatrick. But if you take a step back and look at the broader view of his career path, he needs to be good. He needs to be a success in Miami. We have real questions about his career long term.
Good job, Adam. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate you.
All right, guys. All the best.
All right. That's Adam Beasley right there from the Herald.